Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Quick hits. WTGS Fall Symposium. The 2022 West Texas Geological Society Fall Symposium is scheduled at 8 a.m. today at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Visit tinyurl.com/dnsaz5t4. Back to school COVID-19 vaccine clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a back to school COVID-19 vaccine clinic for ages 6 months and older from 8 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. each Thursday through September. Visit tinyurl.com/54TSK5SK. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library, 321 West 5th Street, has scheduled Read to Felix, Therapy Dog Loves to Hear Stories, from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays through October 27th in the Children's Department. Call 432-332-0633 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. St. Anne's Family Fair, St. Anne's Catholic Church, 1906 West Texas Avenue, Midland, has scheduled the 74th annual St. Anne's Family Fair through Sunday. Gates open at 6 p.m. Thursday and Friday and 10 a.m. Saturday and Sunday. There will be a free community concert, run to the fair, games, face painting, vendors, live music, and more. Community concert will feature Cody, Canada, and the Departed at 8 p.m. Friday. Bring a lawn chair. Run to the fair. 1K, 5K, and 10K run walk will start at 9 a.m. Saturday at St. Anne's. Registration is required at tinyurl.com/y4wk77a4. Carnival armbands are $25. General admission is free with all proceeds benefiting the St. Anne School and Parish. Visit stannsfair.com. Pottery class. The Painted Potter Odessa, 2119 East 42nd Street, has scheduled a pottery class for ages 13 and older at 6 p.m. today. Enjoy an evening of creating two pieces on a potter's wheel with an instructor. 2 weeks after the class, participants will return to glaze their pieces. Tickets are $50 per person and transferable, but non-refundable. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit tinyurl.com/yrk2thha. EFO Concert Fundraiser. The Education Foundation of Odessa has scheduled the annual concert fundraiser featuring Lucas Nelson and POTR, Promise of the Real, at 8:30 p.m. today at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 North Andrews Highway. Doors open at 7 p.m. The benefit will help ECISD students and teachers with innovative approaches to education. Call 800-514-3849 or visit boxofficesolutions.net. Glory Denied. Permian Basin Opera has scheduled the opera performance Glory Denied at 7 p.m. today and Sunday at the Globe of the Great Southwest, 2308 Shakespeare Road. An additional performance will take place at 7 p.m. Tuesday at USO Hall, 302 South Highland Avenue, Marfa. Tickets start at $40. Veterans are free with ID. Visit mypbo.org/opera-live. State Highway 302, get passing lanes. A $36.6 million project to add passing lanes and to rehabilitate nearly 10 miles of Highway 302 in Loving County is scheduled to start this month, a Texas Department of Transportation press release detailed. The project stretches from just west of FM 1933 in Mentone to just east of Purple Cattle Guard Road. The project is scheduled to be completed in early 2025. The project also includes overhead lighting in the Mentone area. The first phase of the project will go from Mentone to about 4 miles east. Traffic will be shifted to the north side of the road as the road is widened. 2 12-foot lanes, one in each direction, will remain open in the first phase, which is scheduled to be completed in December. A width restriction of 11 feet will be put in place in the work zone. A speed limit of 55 miles per hour will be in place in the work zone. Increased law enforcement will be present in the work zone. Motorists are reminded that state law requires them to obey warning signs and flaggers in the work zone. Safety is a top priority for TxDOT. Help is needed from the traveling public to ensure the work zone is kept safe and free of crashes. This is the fifth of six projects worth approximately $238.3 million on Highway 302 in the Odessa District. Other projects include an ongoing $43.5 million project to add passing lanes and rehabilitate approximately 12.6 miles of Highway 302 in western Winkler County from the Loving County line to just west of Highway 115 west of Kermit, an ongoing $54.5 million overpass project to take Highway 302 over Highway 115 and the nearby railroad just west of Kermit to Winkler County. The project is nearly complete and is a few months ahead of schedule. An ongoing $63.3 million project to widen and rehabilitate Highway 302 from County Road 313 in Winkler County to near Highway 181 in Ector County. The project is nearly complete. A completed $12.5 million project to widen and rehabilitate Highway 302 from Highway 285 to Mentone. A project that is scheduled to open bids in December 2022 to widen and rehabilitate about 8 miles of Highway 302 in Loving County from just west of Purple Cattle Guard Road to the Winkler County line. The estimated construction cost is $28 million. Local News Roundup. Arrests made and stabbing at OHS. Just before the start of school Wednesday morning, two Odessa High School students got into a fight and one pulled a knife and cut the other, resulting in minor injuries. The student with the knife, a sophomore boy, is facing a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Because the fight was a mutual decision between the two, both students will face disciplinary consequences, according to the Student Code of Conduct, a news release said. School and school district leaders are, once again, calling on parents to help with these situations. Parents and school staff together must make sure students understand that fighting and violence are not the right way to settle differences, and this type of behavior can have long-term consequences in the form of discipline or criminal charges. School must be a safe place for students to learn, and that will happen when all of us are working together to teach kids to handle conflict and deal with each other without violence. A statement from Ector County ISD said, "This is the second incident involving a knife at OHS. Students in Ireland, Nimitz charged. Ector County Police Wednesday afternoon charged a fifth-grade girl in Ireland Elementary with threat or exhibition of a weapon on school or bus grounds, a Class A misdemeanor. The girl pointed at students in her class as if she had a gun, telling them she would bring a gun to school and shoot them. Students in the class told the teacher, who reported it immediately, a news release said. In a separate incident at Nimitz Middle School, a sixth-grade boy told one of his friends he was planning to shoot at the school today. Like the Ireland student, the boy from Nimitz was arrested for the same criminal charge. There have been a string of incidents and arrests in the past several weeks. Abilene woman dies in wreck. The Odessa Police Department is investigating a head-on collision that took the life of a 29-year-old Abilene woman early Wednesday morning. According to OPD, Michelle Gens was driving a Chevrolet Traverse west on the North Service Road of I-20 when she struck an eastbound Ford F-250 head-on while passing another vehicle in the 8200 block shortly after 7 a.m. Gens was pronounced dead at Medical Center Hospital. Abbott designates Mexican cartels as terrorist organizations. Greg Abbott issued an executive order on Wednesday designating Mexican drug cartels as terrorist organizations and instructing the Texas Department of Public Safety to take immediate action to keep Texans safe amid the growing national fentanyl crisis. At a roundtable discussion and press conference on Wednesday in Midland, the governor also sent a letter to President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris requesting federal terrorist classifications for the Sinaloa Cartel and Jalisco New Generation Cartel, as well as other cartels producing and distributing deadly fentanyl. Fentanyl is a clandestine killer, and Texans are falling victim to the Mexican cartels that are producing it, Abbott stated in the press release. Cartels are terrorists, and it's time we treat them that way. In fact, more Americans died from fentanyl poisoning in the past year than all terrorist attacks across the globe in the past 100 years. In order to save our country, particularly our next generation, we must do more to get fentanyl off our streets. The governor was joined at the roundtable discussion and press conference by DPS Director Steve McCraw, DPS Regional Director West Texas Regional Jose Sanchez, Midland County Judge Terry Johnson, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, Midland County Sheriff Chief Deputy Benny Matlock, Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke, Midland Police Chief Seth Herman, and Midland Memorial Hospital District Police Chief Steve McNeil. Governor Abbott also directed DPS and law enforcement agencies to identify Texas gangs that support Mexican cartels and seize their assets in order to disrupt cartel networks operating in Texas communities, as thousands of Texans have been poisoned unwittingly by counterfeit pills laced with the deadly synthetic opioid. With Mexican drug cartels disguising fentanyl as counterfeit pills and targeting children with rainbow fentanyl pills, the governor emphasizes in his letter that immediate, decisive action is needed from the Biden administration to combat this deadly crisis impacting the nation. Tax rate abatement discussed at OC board work session. The Odessa College Board of Trustees discussed the 2022 tax rate at a work session Wednesday. The board will consider approving the tax rate at its regular meeting set for 6:30 p.m. September 27th in the Zant Room of the Salisbury Campus Center. The proposed rate is 0.188643 per $100 valuation. That is a decrease of 6.5% over last year's tax rate. Last year's tax rate was 0.201723 per $100 valuation. The 2022 no new revenue rate is 0.177210 per $100 valuation. The no new revenue rate, previously known as the effective rate, is a tax rate you have to assess to receive the same amount of revenue as the previous year, less any new construction, Board Chair Gary Johnson said. Johnson said most of the valuations this year came from minerals and new construction. Two tax rate hearings were held, but no one from the public attended or spoke for the new board members. We try to be as aggressive as we can be from a taxation standpoint without exceeding our bounds and limits because we know we're a growing community and we know we have more people to serve and we're going to need different facilities, OC President Gregory Williams said. The board tries to take in as much revenue as we can so that we can move a certain amount of those dollars into Vision 2030, which is what we use to build the new facilities so that we can minimize the need to go out to the public, Williams said. The college went to the public 11 years ago, and that was the only one done in roughly 45 years, he said. We're trying to be really careful about that because we understand the taxation feature, Williams said. Johnson said the board has made a commitment over the years of putting money into its construction programs. From when Williams started at OC 16 years ago, the college is serving more people than ever. Trustees also discussed a tax abatement for GCC, which produces cement, concrete, aggregates, and innovative products for the construction industries in Mexico, the United States, Latin America, and Canada, its website said. It will come to the board for possible approval September 27th. Chief Financial Officer Brandy Ham said as of August 31st, preliminary numbers show that compared to last year, at the same time, the college has excess revenue of $6.5 million over expenditures. Last year, it was $4.6 million. The contingency budget is at $750,000. MC Board approves tax rate decrease. At its regular monthly board meeting on Tuesday, the Midland College Board of Trustees approved a 0.08 cent ad valorem tax rate per $100 of homestead value for the 2022 tax year for the Midland Junior College District. This is a decrease of $0.21151, 20.91%, from the 2021 rate, which was slightly more than $0.10 per $100 valuation. The members of the Midland College Board of Trustees continue to be cognizant of overseeing policies that govern Midland College operations while maintaining a reasonable tax rate that ensures quality education and student services for our students, as well as important community services and enrichment activities, Paul Morris, Midland College Board of Trustees Chair, stated in the press release. Many thanks to the Midland community for their support of and investment in the college over the past 50 years. Other action items approved by the board at the meeting included approval of continuing education, workforce training, tuition, and fees, approval of a contract to Midtechs of Midland for renovation of the Jackie Brown Conference Hall, and approval of the quarterly investment report. Big Texas Rally for Recovery Plan for Midland. Each September, National Recovery Month works to promote and support the emergence of a strong and proud recovery community and the dedication of community members and service providers across the nation who make recovery in all its forms possible and new evidence-based recovery practices. To honor those in addiction or mental health recovery, Thriving United is joining other recovery organizations in Austin, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio, and El Paso to host the Big Texas Rally for Recovery Midland. We are thrilled to be joining the largest cities around the state to highlight the importance of celebrating the gains made by those in addiction and mental health recovery, Executive Director David Stevens said in a news release. The Big Texas Rally for Recovery Midland will be held from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. September 24th at the Yucca Theater. It is free and open to the public. The event will feature music, information booths, speakers, food trucks, and an inflatable fun zone for the kids, the release said. All community partners who support those in recovery are invited to participate in the event. To register as a participant or for more information about the Big Texas Rally for Recovery Midland, visit thrivingunited.org. Obituaries for Thursday, September 22nd. Linda Hulein Holland, 86, of Odessa, was welcomed home into the arms of Jesus September 14th after a courageous battle with cancer. Linda is preceded in death by her father, Herbert Austin Willis, mother, Crystal Eloise Willis Dawson, sister, Betty LaMonica, and husband, Tom, sister, Patsy Sweden, and numerous nieces and nephews. Linda is survived by her daughter, Michelle Martinez, Carl Rice of Odessa, sister Edna Green, cousin Mary Lou Cassidy, and several nieces and nephews and grandchildren. Born in Tyler, Texas, December 29, 1935. The family would like to thank visiting angels, especially her caretakers, Linda, Gloria, Ola, and Easter. Services will be at 11 a.m. on September 24th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Douglas Alfred Miller was born January 11, 1940, and God took him home on September 20th. Funeral service for Doug will be held on Friday, September 23rd at 10 a.m. at Pecos Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Mount Evergreen Cemetery. He was preceded in death by his parents, Buck and Edith Miller, his grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Dee Dee Dean, his sister, Sis Miller, and his brother, Mikey Miller. Doug is survived by his loving wife of 45 years, Glenna Miller, his daughter, Dina Ann Miller Jones, and her husband, James Jones, his son, David Allen Miller, their wonderful mother, Barbara Nelson, who gave him his precious children, his stepchildren, Trey and Amy Miller, Jim and Trudy Miller, and Robin Miller Paul, and Toby Paul, as well as many grandchildren. Everyone is invited for a time of fellowship at the Pecos Valley Country Club following the funeral service. Services are entrusted to Pecos Funeral Home. Juan Aiden Adam Lavario, 1:15 a.m. Adam Lavario, age 82, went peacefully in his home Wednesday, September 21st in Schertz, Texas. Adam is preceded in death by his parents, Ramon and Ignacia Lavario, his siblings, Amando, Angel, and Abel Lavario, daughter, Sylvia Ann, sons, Sammy and Sonny Lavario. He is survived by his wife, Martha Alinez Lavario, daughter, Sally and Cesar Avia, Susanna and Ricardo Garza, Alexa and Mario Garza, son, Leroy Armendariz, siblings, Alfred Lavario, Alicia Lavario, Arturo Lavario, Adelia Orona, and Aurora Alvarez. Adam is also survived by 13 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. No memorial or funeral service will be held honoring Adam's final wishes.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading sports articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American from the past few days. We'll first begin with the Midland Reporter-Telegram, dated Tuesday, September 20th. High school football, ground attack helps MHS earn road win, by Christopher Hattern. Midland High sits in a good place at 3-1 after earning a tough road win against Lubbock Monterey on Friday night at Lowry Field. Briley Perez rushed 15 times for 142 yards and a touchdown, and Mecky McCoy amassed 105 rushing yards and 2 scores on 17 carries to propel the Bulldogs to an 18-13 win over the Plainsmen in a non-district football game. The MHS triple option offense threw the ball only 3 times while rushing 59 times for 330 yards in the victory. The Bulldogs' run-heavy offense, by nature, can eat up the clock, but MHS head coach Thad Fortune said Monterey, 0-4, chewed up time with its offensive strategy as well. As far as the pace of the game and the style of the game, we're very comfortable with that, Fortune said. They kind of did it like Amarillo High did. They really sat on the ball, too. We only had 1 possession in the first quarter. We had only 3 possessions in the first half. They were trying to run the ball and run the clock out as well. Offensively, we had a bad 3-and-out in the first half, but we scored touchdowns on 2 of 3 possessions. The Bulldogs seemingly were in a good spot to win when Perez scored on a 15-yard run to give the Bulldogs a 2-score lead at 18-7 with 5:55 left to play. But the game got interesting in the waning minutes as the Plainsmen answered with a 75-yard TD pass from Luke Arrington to Hebrew Hunter to cut the deficit to 18-13. The Monterey defense responded, too, by forcing MHS into a punting situation with a 4th-and-1 on its own 34 with 3.5 minutes remaining. However, the Plainsmen never got the ball back as they were penalized for lining up a player over the long snapper in a punt formation. The Bulldogs remained on offense with the first down and converted 2 more first downs to kill the clock and seal the win. I'm glad the refs know the rules, Fortune said of the penalty on the punt. Yes, it was 4th-and-1 from our 34. I really thought about going for it. If you don't get it, it's tough. We actually had a really good punt. We punted it inside the 20. It was a really good punt. Levi Crowder had a great punt. but we will certainly take that 5-yard penalty to keep the ball. MHS bounced back from a 27-8 loss to Amarillo High the week prior. The Bulldogs also got a win at Lowry Field after going 0-2 at the stadium in Fortune's first season last year. Midland High is off to its best start since 2016, when the Bulldogs started 3-1 and finished with the 9-3 mark. Fortune said the Bulldogs still have to eliminate little mistakes that are putting the offense behind the chains. MHS hosts El Paso Andres 1-3 in its fifth and final non-district game at 7 p.m. Friday at Astound Broadband Stadium. "We're really pleased where we are, and I think we've grown a lot as a team," Fortune said. "We just got to keep doing that and keep getting better every week. We have a tough opponent this week with El Paso Andres and homecoming and all of the stuff that comes with that. And then it will be district season. The season is heating up." Legacy hopes to grow from OT loss to number 8 steal, by Christopher Hattern. The Legacy coaching staff and players were upset by the Rebels' 35-28 loss to number 8-ranked Cibolo Steel in overtime last Friday at Astound Broadband Stadium. This was the type of football game that Legacy expected to win. Although the outcome wasn't in their favor, the Rebels, 2-2, saw the experience of playing a top-flight program like Steel, 4-0, as a positive. Legacy believes it will eventually face teams on the level of the Knights in the second to fourth rounds of the Region 1 playoffs. LHS has fallen in either the second or third round of the playoffs in each of its last 5 years to a Dallas-Fort Worth area school. "Am I disappointed that we lost?" Rebels head coach Clint Hartman said. "You're dang right. I hate to lose. I'm never going to change my feelings about that. Am I mad about their effort, or do I love that team any less? Nope. But they've got to learn in the playoffs, when you lose one like this, you're hugging their neck and they're crying, and I don't want to do that with Canyon Moses and Mario Serrano. I don't want to do that with those seniors. I want to play this thing for a long time. So we learned a lot. We got better tonight." Legacy had to be encouraged by its fourth quarter rally as it trailed the Knights 28-14 heading into the final period. On a 4th-and-6 play, Rebels quarterback Marcos Davila didn't play it safe as he fired a bomb deep to the end zone to Deonata Sonier for a 39-yard touchdown. LHS cut its deficit to 28-21 with 10:31 remaining. The Rebel defense forced Steele to punt with 5:56 on the clock, giving Davila a chance to engineer a game-saving drive. Davila and the Rebels followed with a 16-play, 80-yard drive in which they survived three separate fourth-down situations. On the last fourth-down situation, Zeke Luna scored on a 2-yard TD run out of a Wildcat formation with 19 seconds left in regulation. Hartman opted to go for the win on a 2-point play, but had to settle for a game-tying pat from Hayden Smith following a false start penalty. "At the start of it, we were a little nervous and we were making little simple mistakes," LHS senior safety and team captain Mario Serrano said. "But at the end of it, we knew they were just like us. They were going to hit us. We were going to hit them back." Steele prevailed in overtime as it got the ball first and scored on an 18-yard pass from Chad Warner to Joe Perez on 3rd-and-16. "I hope we put a good show on for the fans," Knights head coach David Zion said. "Coach Hartman and their staff, they do a tremendous job, and they've got a really good football team. I see them making a run through Region 1 as well. I'm just excited to come out with a win." The Rebels had to wonder if the outcome might have been different if it weren't for some costly miscues. The Legacy defense forced Steele to punt from its own territory on the opening drive of the game, but squandered the opportunity to seize early momentum when the Rebels were penalized for a personal foul on the punt. With the drive extended, the Knights capitalized as Utah State commit Jaden Bailey scored on a 25-yard run on 4th-and-1 to give his team a 7-0 lead. While LHS trailed 14-7 in the second quarter, Davila threw a wide receiver screen that was intercepted by Steele's Levi Dashnia and returned to the Rebel 7. The turnover was costly as Bailey scored on a one-yard run to extend the Knights' lead to 21-7 late in the second quarter. "For us, I think a lot of it was self-inflicted," Hartman said. "We didn't line up right all the time. The interception, the receiver didn't block the guy. That isn't the quarterback's fault. Davila throws it knowing he has to block. And that kid is going to get better from it because he knows how important it is. We are where we want to be. I'm extremely proud of our team and their efforts." The Rebels will play another historical state power when they visit Converse Judson, 1-3, at 7:30 p.m. Friday. Now moving to the Odessa American, Sunday, September 18th. High school football, week 4. Broncos have a rough trip to Amarillo. Sandies dominate first half in victory. By Lee Scheide, Amarillo. Big plays in the first half and lack of possessions in the second half proved to be too much for the Odessa High football team Friday night. Amarillo High rushed out to a large lead in the first half and then coasted after halftime for a 42-17 victory against the Broncos at Dick Bivens Stadium. Running back Pius Vokes rushed 15 times for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns, including a 41-yarder to start the scoring just 3:31 into the game. He also caught 3 passes for 78 yards and 1 score. A 60-yard pitch and catch from quarterback Mason Graham with 4:38 remaining in the first half to cap the Sandys' outburst. Graham finished the night 13 of 19 passing for 170 yards and 4 touchdowns. "We just didn't play very well, and Amarillo High played as well as I've seen them this year," Odessa High head coach Dusty Ortiz said. "I know their defensive line was good, but they played very well and put a lot of pressure on us and didn't give us much time to throw the ball. They hit some big plays in the first half, and then in the half, they went on a 12-play, 70-yard drive that took, I think, minutes off the clock. I think we had the ball twice in the second half, maybe 3 times. Odessa High ran just 44 plays on the night. Sophomore running back Jorge Valdez was a bright spot for the Broncos, 2-2, finishing with 6 carries for 98 yards and 2 touchdowns, 5 and 82 yards. Quarterback Jaylen Jones was held to 5 of 11 passing for 39 yards before leaving the game after a hard tackle. Sophomore kicker Jacob Hornman connected on a 34-yard goal for Odessa High at the end of the first half. The Broncos close out their non-district schedule against Schertz Clemens at 4 p.m. on September 24th at Ratliff Stadium. They will have a bye the following week before meeting Permian at 7 p.m. October 7th to open District 2-6A play. Daredevil Act. Permian uses another second-half rally to edge Harker Heights. By Lee Scheide. Permian's last 2 football games have been a tightrope act that would have made the Walinda family proud. Head coach Jeff Ellison would likely prefer games that weren't quite as stressful coming down the stretch. For the second consecutive week, the Panthers were forced to rally in the second half in hopes of keeping their unblemished record in 2022 intact. And for the second straight contest, Permian was able to finish on the right side of the scoreboard. Scoring just 2 touchdowns in the final 4 minutes, the Panthers came back for a 28-27 victory against Killeen Harker Heights in non-district play Friday at Ratliff Stadium. Justice Lara's 1-yard dive over the right side and Tate Terry's extra point gave Permian the lead for the first time with 16 seconds remaining in the game. "I just didn't think we played very well in the first half on either side of the ball," Ellison said. "They are a good football team with a lot of speed, and it took our guys a second, actually a lot longer, to kind of get comfortable. We weren't attacking the line of scrimmage. When we got settled down, I thought we were a different football team in the second half." It was role reversal for the Panthers, 4-0, from the first half to the second, and they needed some breaks to solidify the comeback. Harker Heights running back Rashawn Sanford ran amok in the first half for the Knights, 3-1, carrying the ball 17 times for 108 yards and 2 touchdowns. Quarterback Dylan Plake passed for 128 yards in the first 24 minutes and added 2 scores as Harker Heights led 27-7 at the break after amassing 294 yards of offense. The Knights finished with 384. "We didn't really make too many adjustments at halftime," Permian safety Bryce Woody said. "We weren't playing very hard. We just had to play harder. Just had to play Permian football." The Panthers did just that in the second half, shutting down the Knights on their opening drive. Though Permian couldn't capitalize and was forced to kick the ball away, punter Jacob Franco flipped the field with the 63-yard effort that rolled into the end zone for a touchback. Permian's Jace Gilliam manufactured the first break when he intercepted a pass off the hands of the Knights receiver with 8 minutes to play in the third quarter. Enter Panthers quarterback Rodney Hall, who proceeded to orchestrate a 12-play, 60-yard drive that saw Lara dive over from the two for his first touchdown of the game with 2:03 remaining in play in the third quarter. "We were pumped on the sideline," Hall said about the interception. "We knew that we needed to play better and we weren't going to lose at home." After the Panthers score, Harker Heights was able to take time off the clock offensive and stopped one Permian drive with an interception deep in Knights territory with 8:40 remaining in play. But the Permian defense was playing with renewed energy and force another punt with 5:53 to play in the game. Hall, starting at his own 15, guided the Panthers 85 yards and 9 plays for the score, a 31-yard touchdown to Jaquan Richardson, who made a diving catch in the end zone. Permian trailed 27-21 at the time, and here comes the second break. Terry pooched the kickoff short to the right of the field, and Harker Heights fumble, with Permian's Parker Haynes recovering the ball at the Knights 28. But the Harker Heights defense stiffened, and Permian was faced with a 4th-and-15 from the 33 to keep its comeback hopes alive. That's when Richardson used his speed for break number 3, racing past a Knights defender, forcing him to hold and bump him to slow him down, subsequently earning a pass interference penalty. Just 2 plays later, it was time for break number 4, as Hall was pulled to the ground by his face mask. Suddenly, the Panthers had first and goal at the 6 with less than 2 minutes on the clock. Lara raced to the 1 on first down. And then the Panthers were called for an illegal substitution that moved the ball back to the 6 on second down. Again, Lara ran to the 1 on third down with everyone on the field and in the stands knowing what was coming. He drove over the right side of the line of scrimmage for the game winner. Terry then sent another pooch kick to the same spot, and the Knights failed to cover it, allowing Permian to recover and run out the final 16 seconds. "Everyone knew it wasn't a secret what we were going to do," Ellison said of the final play. "The offensive line was doing a great job, and Laura was pushing hard. I'm proud of the way we played in the second half. They never stopped fighting." Now back to the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 21st. Area Football Notebook. Greenwood's offense clicks and win over number 7 Shallow Water by Oscar Leroy. Greenwood football team hopes last week's offensive performance is the start of something good for the Rangers. Greenwood had its best offensive performance of the season in a 43-28 victory over then number 7 ranked Shallow Water as the Rangers, 2-2, rushed for 309 of their 422 total yards. Two backs, Aaron Fikes and Dylan Dominguez, had 100-yard rushing games, and senior quarterback Ty Flowers had one of his better games, going 6 of 7 for 113 yards and a TD. Also, MRT Area Football Player of the Week, Rance Purser, had a big day, receiving with 4 catches for 98 yards and a TD to go with his school record 61-yard field goal. "I think things kind of clicked for us," said Greenwood head coach Rusty Purser of his offense. "We really challenged the offensive line last week, coming off the Andrews game. The effort was good in that game, so it's not like we played bad against a bad football team. We didn't play well against a good football team, so we challenged them as they came out, and they had the best game they've had this season up front. Shallow Water was a little beat up. I didn't feel sorry for them because we've got plenty of kids that are hurt for us, too. I think it did impact their game planning as much as anything, as for what they were doing defensively. They were pretty vanilla. They didn't bring any stunts, and it enabled us to handle what they were doing pretty well. Persa said it was also good to see the passing game have a good night behind Flowers. Because we were able to run the ball, they were going to give us some stuff in the passing game, Purser said. We were finally able to get him more involved to stretch the field a little more. I thought Ty threw the ball as well as he's thrown the ball, maybe ever, as far as being on time and getting it to the right spots. The win certainly helped take some of the bad taste out of the Rangers' mouths from the week before in the loss at Andrews. And this win will also be a boost for the Rangers, who will next host a 4-0 Canyon squad at J.M. King Memorial Stadium. From a confidence standpoint and letting us feel better going into the week, it was huge, Purser said. Obviously, coming out of Andrews was really disappointing. Even though it was a good football team, you hate losing. Shallow Water is one of the better 3A Division I schools, so to play well up there and be able to improve on the things we had not done well the week before, it gave us more confidence than anything. Steer's defense rising up. Big Spring won its third straight game, and once again, the defense played a big part in the victory. The Steers, 3-1, held Sweetwater to 134 total yards and forced three turnovers in a 20-7 victory at the Mustang Bowl. The defense is playing well right now, Big Spring coach Cannon McWilliams said. They're playing physical. They're playing fast. I've said this a million times, that our strength was going to be our front, and it's coming to fruition. Until our offense gets to be more consistent, our defense is going to keep us in a lot of ball games. McWilliams said it was also big for the Steers to go to Sweetwater and get a win against one of their oldest rivals. That's a program with a lot of tradition, McWilliams said. The Mustang Bowl is special. It was homecoming and it was packed, so anytime you get a win over Sweetwater, it's huge. McWilliams said the Steers are still dealing with some injuries, but they are slowly getting everybody back. Despite that, the Steers seem to be playing with a lot of confidence. Our kids have a never-say-die attitude, McWilliams said. The kids just keep fighting and keep playing to win. We go into every game expecting to win. We may not win every game, but the kids will play physical and play hard. Whatever happens, our kids have done a good job of having a next-play mentality. The Steers look to keep playing at a high level when they host Snyder 2-2 at 7 p.m. Friday. Snyder is coming off a 48-21 loss to Monahans last week. Andrews looks to refocus after loss. While Andrews would have preferred to have been coming off a win, Mustang coach Tom Harvey said the 36-15 loss to Seminole seemed to have refocused the Mustangs this week. The last 2 days have been some of the best workouts we've had since the game has started, Harvey said. We're in a good place right now. Andrews took a 15-14 halftime lead over Seminole, but the Indians' defense shut out the Mustangs in the second half. Harvey said some of the things his team has been working on this week is having better communication on defense and being physical on offense. We left some plays out there that maybe we could have done a better job in, and we're working more on our mental approach. I think these are things that are fixable, Harvey said. While the team has had some injuries, and there are a few kids who have yet to see game action this season, such as standout receiver Jalen Jones, Harvey said they should be getting a little healthier and slowly getting some kids back. Harvey said senior quarterback E.J. Lopez has been one of those players who has been battling through injuries, but he was able to see action at quarterback along with senior Ashton Galvin on Friday. He's proven that he's very good at throwing the ball, and he came in and did a good job. EJ has a number of ways he can help us in a situational offense, Harvey said. Andrews will look to get back in the win column when it hosts Lubbock High 2-2 at 7 p.m. Friday. Kahoma on a hot streak. A young Kahoma team continues to play at a high level as the Bulldogs won their third straight game and a 35-7 blowout at Colorado City. We played really well, Kahoma coach Chris Jocelyn said. We had a lot of penalties, as we had three touchdowns called back. But we played well on defense and got a lot of people to touch the ball, which is our goal every week. We're looking forward to getting better each week. Freshman quarterback Boyd Cox completed 13 of 25 passes to six different receivers for 234 yards. Jocelyn said eliminating penalties has got to be an area the Bulldogs, 3-1, must improve in. Gahoma was flagged 12 times for 110 yards against the Wolves. Up next for the Bulldogs is a homecoming game against Merkel, 1-3, on Friday. Merkel will be a good test for us, Jocelyn said. Their quarterback is really good, and they have some kids who gave us a lot of fits last year. Garden City prepares for another test. Garden City coach Jeff Jones said his team can't have the penalties and turnovers that it had against number 3-ranked May in the first quarter and expect to win. Because of those mistakes, the number 9 Bearcats fell behind 37-14 in the opening quarter before falling 63-34 in a matchup of top 10-ranked teams in Class 1A Division 1. We kind of shot ourselves in the foot, said Jones of the early mistakes. The good news for the Bearcats, 3-1, is they played even with the Tigers the rest of the way, and they were doing without three injured players in defensive end Denton Rowe, back Jordan Jones, and back Blaine Waltz. I think we could play with them once we get all our guys back and have our team, Jones said. They're a very good team, but at the end of the game, we had as much offensive yardage, 432 to May's 449, even though we kept shooting ourselves in the foot. The Bearcats don't have time to dwell on last week's game as they face another big test with a road trip to number 1-ranked Westbrook, 4-0, on Friday. It will be another tough battle, Jones said. They're number 1 in the state, and they deserve it. We were one of their losses last year, so you know they're going to be motivated with us going out there. Private School Report. Midland Christian hungry to snap 3-game losing streak, by Oscar Leroy. Midland Christian coach Chris Cunningham said the Mustangs are doing a lot of things well. They just have to keep improving and clean up some things to snap a 3-game losing streak. The Mustangs, 1-3, had a 21-7 lead in the third quarter against San Antonio Cornerstone before the Warriors rallied for a 28-21 victory at Gordon Autry Field last Friday. Anytime you lose 3 in a row, you look and analyze everything that you're doing, Cunningham said. We're doing things well, but we're talking in terms of doing them better. We're trying to make sure that what we're working on is becoming more comfortable of the kids. They shouldn't have to think too much about what they're doing out there. We're trying to get better at the fundamentals, like tackling, like penalties on offense. Those are some of the things that have been continual, and some of those things have been on us coaches. We have gone back on emphasizing those things in practice. While it was a frustrating loss, Cunningham saw a lot of positives from his team last Friday. He said senior quarterback Blake Pruitt, 83 yards rushing, 2 TDs, had a good game running with the football. The defense got a key red zone stop to end the first half, and the Mustangs had good series to start both halves. A key play for Cornerstone came early in the fourth quarter as the Warriors converted a 4th-and-9 with a 17-yard TD pass to tie the game at 21-all. When asked if his team's inexperience in some areas factored in what happened in the fourth quarter, Cunningham said, while these kids have 4 games under their belts, situationally, they were some things that happened late in the game that might not have been used to. If we get a stop defensively and not give up a touchdown, I think our offense goes and scores and we win this thing, he said. We've got to learn to make those big plays and capitalize on it. The Mustangs can end the losing streak and get some of that confidence back with a win against UIL Class 6A Del Rio, 0-4, at 2 p.m. Saturday at Gordon Autry Field. A win always helps, Cunningham said. Wins are always huge, but I never felt like any one game determines a trajectory of a team. But a win at this point is going to feel better, and it's going to build confidence. It would be how you would like to go into district play or a bye. A win is always the best therapy for me.
Heart failure and atrial fibrillation. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 88-year-old female in relatively good health. A year and a half ago, I did experience atrial fibrillation and two cardioversions. The first was good for a year. The second lasted only 3 months. The diagnosis is paroxysmal AFib. My cardiologist has recommended a third cardioversion, which would require taking 400 milligrams of Multaq twice a day prior to the procedure and remaining on this medication for the rest of my life, presuming the procedure is successful. If not, a stronger medication would be required. My blood pressure, cholesterol, triglycerides, etc., are all in good levels. My question, in your opinion, if I choose to tolerate intermittent episodes of AFib in the long run, would this not eventually lead to the development of congestive heart failure, SS? Answer, the major concern here, apart from reducing symptoms, which you don't normally have, is the development of a stroke. So every person with atrial fibrillation is considered for anticoagulation. There are other concerns, including development of heart failure. People with atrial fibrillation who have frequent fast heart rates are at risk of developing heart failure. Paroxysmal AFib comes and goes. There is about the same risk of a stroke with paroxysmal AFib as with continuous AFib. Apart from medication to reduce the risk of stroke, there are two major strategies called rate control and rhythm control. Cardioversion, using electricity to break the atrial fibrillation cycle and return the heart to normal rhythm, followed by treatment with antiarrhythmic drugs like dronedarone, Multaq, is the rhythm control strategy. Rhythm control is generally preferred in people at higher risk for heart disease, especially if they have not had AFib for more than a year.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, September 22nd. Granddaughter disturbed by grandmother's early work. Dear Abby, my grandma died when I was 7. She was my favorite person, and I adored her. She played with me when no one else had the time, taught me how to bake, told me stories, and didn't care that I was playing in the dishwater when she was trying to wash the dishes. I always knew that before she married Grandpa, she had worked as a cook in an American Indian boarding school in the U.S. I now know how atrocious, evil, and disgusting those places were. They practiced government and church-condoned cultural genocide and were places where children were sexually and emotionally abused. Although I love my grandma, I'm embarrassed, angry, and disgusted that she worked in one. If it was church-affiliated, I know she would have overlooked any abuse, even if she saw the act. How can I get past my anger and hurt at someone for something they did a lifetime ago? She has been dead more than 40 years. Signed, Hurt Granddaughter. Dear Hurt, from your description, your grandmother was a loving, caring, hard-working woman who was trying to feed and possibly nurture the children living in the boarding school. It may have been the only job she could find to support herself. While terrible things happened there, they were not her fault. Child abuse isn't restricted to any one religion. Today, many religious people in many denominations cannot bring themselves to believe there is such evil among them. If your grandmother had shortcomings, forgive her for them and move on with your life. Dwelling on these negative feelings for someone who is good to you and is long gone isn't healthy for you. Dear Abby, my wife died 2 years ago. I met a woman shortly afterward. We dated for a year, shared the same hobbies, and were very intimate. We were inseparable. Now, after a year of marriage, we don't do anything together, and she has put on 30 pounds. Her 3 girls, who I was led to believe were independent at ages 20, 22, and 24, are actually supported in part by her. Her 15-year-old son lives with us and just stays in his room playing on his computer. He gets food delivered and does no chores. I make $250,000 a year. She works and earns about $50,000, and I give her an allowance to help pay for her son's private school and whatever else she wants. It's obvious that I'm not number one in her life. Since she just returned from a girls' weekend that I funded, I may not even be number two. My friends say I should run, that she's a gold digger who took advantage of me. I can't believe I was so wrong, and I'm always giving her one more chance. Also, if I come near her cell phone, she goes crazy. As I write this, it seems obvious what's going on. Am I being taken advantage of in a big way? Could I be missing something? Signed, Ranking Low in North Carolina. Dear Ranking, not knowing your wife, I can't judge for you whether she's a gold digger. Of this I am certain, however, you are being taken advantage of no more than you want to be. If you have any desire to save this marriage, tell your wife you are unhappy and offer her the option of counseling. If she refuses, consult an attorney and thank your lucky stars that your marriage has been a short one.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.